Now, we spent a while discussing what's in the Irish papers this morning, but the British papers are fairly universal in some of the issues that they're dealing with on their front page. And it's not all like the Irish, the Daily Star on Sunday, which is leading with David Ginla revealing that he's a real chauvinist. It's more to do with the spread of Omicron and the political handling of it. The NHS is ready to jab children as young as five, we learn on the front page of the Sunday Times in the British edition, which also says that up to 60 MPs could vote against the government this week when it tries to implement new rules around the covering of faces in retail areas and other setup settings. The Observer says that scientists fear that falling trust in Boris Johnson could harm the bid to crush the Omicron curve. Sunday Telegraph again talks about the Prime Minister facing revolt from his own MPs. The Sunday Express, which would usually be a pro-Boris paper, does acknowledge that it's a make-or-break week for the Prime Minister. And the front page of the Sunday Mirror today has a fairly significant story which is making a lot of waves across the sea. Tinsel, Santa hats and bubbly as Boris hosted this COVID rule-breaking number 10 Christmas quiz. It says, yes, he was taking us for fools again. The Prime Minister sitting in as a quizmaster in a partly online but partly in-person quiz, which apparently happened in breach of London's COVID rules last December. George Parker, the political editor of the Financial Times, is with me. George, this is yet another significant development. I wonder, is there, as of yet, any sign of people having any fatigue in this story about what number 10 got up to last Christmas?
Well, I'm not sure there's fatigue setting in. I think there's a general sense of political anger at Westminster among Conservative MPs for the way that Boris Johnson's handled this total debacle, and certainly out in the country. If you look at the opinion polls, this story about Christmas parties in Downing Street has really sort of made an impact with members of the public in a way that some political stories don't. Now, whether Boris Johnson being a quizmaster in what has to be said was an online quiz for staff in number 10, had a couple of aides in the room with him, one of them was wearing tinsel and a Santa hat, whether that is going to be the thing that really tips him over the edge, I'm not sure. But certainly what's well entrenched in people's minds is that Boris Johnson and people in his office didn't seem to be taking the rules quite as seriously as members of the public were last year.
Yeah, maybe it's worth stressing exactly what is supposed to have been involved in this quiz. This, is broken today by The Mirror, which was the paper that originally broke details of this Christmas do about a week ago. So the intimation of this, and George, you might correct me if I'm wrong, is that there was a quiz which was originally supposed to be held exclusively online for Downing Street staff, but then as the day went on, it just became more convenient for some of the staff to actually just stay together in work and to participate as teams there, and that wasn't really within the rules or the spirit of what London was supposed to be under at the time.
Yeah, people weren't meant to be sort of having parties at all, Christmas parties. I suppose it depends what constitutes a Christmas party. And in this case, there seemed to be, I think, six teams of four, people sitting at their desks answering sort of quite jokey questions. For example, I think Boris Johnson asked, one of the questions was how many cases of COVID have there been, that Priti Patel had bungled or some answer at some press conference earlier in the year. So it was kind of a joke. It was kind of a jokey quiz. Mm. The picture that the Mirror has, as I said, is Boris Johnson sitting in an office with two staff members sort of sitting either side of him. It doesn't look like a party. And frankly, although this may have broken the rules, the thing that really is lodged in people's minds is a much bigger event on December the 18th, where probably 40 or 50 people were standing around drinking wine, eating food, playing games. I mean, that sounds rather more like a party to me.
It does. And I suppose the common thread to those two events is that they would have both been attended by people who probably work there anyway. So if you were charitably minded, you could say that these are events where people who work beside each other cheek by jowl 9 to 5, 5 days a week are just still there after hours, and what's the harm? Because if they're already been exposed to each other, then what's going to change? But this was at a time, and particularly because it was Christmas, when people were being told that even hanging back to be with people who you'd ordinarily seen anyway was supposed to be advised against and was considered unnecessary.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, look, I personally think that if Downing Street had said right at the start of this 10 days ago, whenever the Daily Mirror first broke the story, look, it was inappropriate, we regret what happened, people have been disciplined and we apologise. If they said that straight away, I think a lot of people would have thought, well, they were working in the office. It was one of those things where work morphed into a bit of a sort of glass of wine and a bit of food afterwards. They'd been working under a lot of pressure. They'd have been angry about it, but I think the storm would have passed. I think it was the fact that Boris Johnson and his team have insisted that this wasn't a party is the thing that's really kept the story going. Because, of course, people like my colleagues in the lobby have all been trying to find out exactly what happened. And what happened was a party.
Does that point that you make about how this could have been better handled and may have been put away, does that point to maybe a bigger malaise in Downing Street at the moment, that maybe the political antennae are not as finely tuned as they were, and that once upon a time, when Boris Johnson got into Downing Street first, he was very, very keenly aware of what the public were thinking or what Britain would want, and that maybe that sense has been lost over time.
I think that's probably true. I mean, Boris Johnson is, as you say, sort of very attuned to public opinion. But, you know, is it arrogance? Is it fatigue? Is it just general incompetence? I don't know. But, you know, you have to think back 2 or 3 weeks ago to the Owen Paterson affair, this sort of allegations of corruption against a Tory MP, and the way that Boris Johnson handled that. It was obvious that that was going to backfire on him. It was going to cause a lot of public anger, but he did it anyway.
This is where he engineered a vote in the House of Commons, which basically would have overturned the proposed suspension, and he made all of his MPs line up in the lobbies to save Owen Paterson, and then announced the following day with all the kickback that he was going to have to go anyway.
Yeah, it was a double disaster. He basically wanted to collapse the rules in the House of Commons to save a corrupt Tory MP, essentially. Marched his MPs up a hill, then marched them down again the next day and had to do a humiliating retreat. I mean, that caused a lot of damage to Boris Johnson amongst the parliamentary party. And then if you stir into that now the move to Plan B on COVID, which has infuriated dozens of Tory MPs who don't think we should be doing it at all, and sort of on the libertarian wing of the party, he's got a sort of, he's basically annoyed virtually every section of the Conservative Party. He's in quite a lot of trouble with his own MPs, that's for sure.
If you follow all the psychodrama of Dominic Cummings' Twitter account, which I do, and then the psychodrama of his Substack feed, which I don't, you get the impression that, again, and Cummings knows how number 10 works and broadly, again, would be in tune with public opinion, that he almost gets the opinion that this is, you get the impression that it's almost becoming unsalvageable, that you'd need to have someone really going into number 10 and whipping them up sharp very quickly to get any kind of discipline on the place, or else that it's all going to come asunder very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that Boris Johnson will turn to the kind of wise old heads he used to surround himself with at City Hall when he was Mayor of London, where he did run a reasonably competent administration, largely because he had experienced people to whom he delegated work. It's much harder in number 10, where a lot of the decisions actually end up on the Prime Minister's desk. And you hear people saying he needs to shake up his operation. But in the end, the problem is Boris Johnson. He's not going to change at this point. He's a slightly shambolic, chaotic figure. He almost thrives in chaos. And the question is, the public who've tolerated this up to this point and seen Boris Johnson as kind of a lovable rogue, a bit of a chancer, but, you know, he's on our side sort of thing. If that changes and the public think that the joke's not funny or anymore, or that he's basically a liability, then I think Tory MPs will turn on him very quickly.
The national opinion polls would appear to suggest that maybe that point is coming, and no one wants to read too much into a trend that's only appeared over the last 10 days or so. But in the polls that have been taken since Partygate, if you want to call it that, the Labour Party does now appear to have a fairly comfortable lead. There's a big by-election coming up, which is to replace the seat that was vacated by Owen Paterson, and things are looking fairly ropey.
Yeah, North Shropshire was Owen Paterson's seat, and when he resigned as an MP, I think everyone just assumed that would be a fairly safe Tory win. It's a rock-solid, rural Tory seat, voted very solidly for Brexit. I think it was over 60% of people there voted for Brexit, with a 23,000 majority, as I said. And the Liberal Democrats, who finished third in that contest only 2 years ago, have been putting on a real fight. They flooded the constituency with activists. And according to the latest bookies' odds, they're now the favourites to win it, which is an absolute earthquake. You know, 23,000 majority in a place like Shropshire, and a real sign of public discontent, not just political content at Westminster with Boris Johnson.
How much could you write it down, though, to the fact that they're filling the seat which was vacated by a textbook example of Tory sleaze, and that is the motivating factor there, and that it might be a little bit of a stretch then to put all of the national stuff in the same basket?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think you're right. There are special circumstances around it. But according to Tory activists who've been knocking on doors and on the phones, virtually every call comes back with people talking about parties in number 10 Downing Street. So I think the national picture is very much playing out in that constituency.
What needs to change then for Boris Johnson? If they were to lose that seat, which now looks like it could be a very real prospect, what needs to change, or is it even possible for someone to come in and impose the sort of discipline that could get Boris back to the popularity that he previously was?
Well, I think he'll first of all hope to stagger through to Christmas and hope that, you know, as always, Christmas becomes a sort of political firebreak and people are talking about something else in the new year, probably, unfortunately, the Omicron variant of coronavirus. But he basically will need to take up his team. I suspect that, you know, if the party is proven to have been a party by this internal inquiry he's launched, then that might be an excuse to move out some of the people who were at the party and bring in a fresh team. I think that's being urged on him by Tory MPs. But basically, he just needs to cut out the mistakes, just concentrate, keep his head down, just concentrate on doing government rather than doing stupid things. But frankly, Boris Johnson's not going to change. And that's the That's the hard fact at the heart of this. You can bring in any number of new advisors, but in the end, you're still dealing with Boris Johnson.
I suppose maybe he could just spend some more time over Christmas bringing the kids to Peppa Pig World, given that the first visit went so brilliantly. We will leave it there. George Parker, political editor of the Financial Times, joining us live from London. Thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime.